You are listening to the Tudor History and Travel Show, Travel Essentials, the place to be for all the best top tips and inspiration for planning your Tudor adventures. So, let's get ready to hit the road with Sarah Morris, the Tudor Travel Guide.
Hello everyone, it's Sarah, the Tudor Travel Guide here. And welcome back to this second episode of the Tudor and History and Travel Show, Travel Essentials. Now, this show goes out on podcasts, but if you're not aware, we also video the recording of this show, which you can find over on my YouTube channel. Just search for the Tudor Travel Guide on YouTube or for the link in the description below. So as you're probably aware by now, Travel Essentials is for those of you who love packing your bags and hitting the road and going to see your Tudor history and visit some of your favourite Tudor locations. And we are here to help you with lots of different top tips that should help with your planning and your visit here to the UK. So as ever, this show is going to be in three parts. In a moment, I'm going to be inviting in our travel guru, Philippa Brewer from British History Tours, who's going to be chewing over with me another one of those oft-asked questions, particularly for those of you coming from overseas, and that is, how much do things cost here in the UK? How much can you expect to be spending if you come over here on holiday? So we'll be looking at that from all sorts of different angles. And then I have the pleasure of inviting actually one of our listeners onto the show. And today we're going to be hearing from Lisa, who's going to be talking to us about her favourite historic place to stay. So more on that in a moment. And then finally, I'll be rounding off with some Tudor-themed events, some virtual online and others in the flesh, COVID allowing, of course, that you can enjoy. So without waiting any further, let me invite Philippa to the show. Hi, Philippa. Welcome back.
Hi, Sarah. Thank you.
How have you been doing last month, isn't it? It's a month since we caught up here on the Tudor Travel Show. What have you been up to?
Yes. Well, from the four walls of my new office, I don't know if it was painted last time we did this, but I've been doing some talks online, which has been really interesting thing to get used to doing, but that's been really fun. Especially, it was to the WI, so the Women's Institute. They were really, really great bunch, about 91 of them in the end. So it was very fun. Been doing more of on this day in history videos. So if anyone wants to just have, they're very short. I like doing short, sharp snippets because people are busy. So it gets information over quite quickly. And I've set up a British History Club as well on Patreon. So it's been quite busy.
Ooh, right. Okay. Well, maybe before we go today, you can just give us a few hints about where we can find you online and where we can catch up with some of those things that you're doing, because people can book virtual tours with you, can't they? And of course, Now with your Patreon program, it would be great to be able to give people a way of finding you. So let's remember to do that. Although, you know, we're likely to get carried away with our conversation, as we often do. So I mentioned we're talking today all about money, aren't we? Dosh, cash, money, whatever you want to call it. So what have you been looking into for us for this week? Well,
so there are typical things that people want to know, how much is this going to cost when they come over? So I've looked at costs of trains and travelling around London in particular, but only because London is kind of, then it has its own transport system, and then everywhere else is a little bit similar to everywhere else, if you know what I mean. I also want to mention things like ticket prices, because some places you can get into for free, other places more expensive, and also some of the passes you might want to look into purchasing if there's a particular set of places you want to make sure you go and see when you're here. And then we'll have a little talk as well about how much food costs, which I know food is one of your favourite subjects. So.
Have you noticed? Philippa said to me the other day when we were talking about something online, didn't you? You said, I'm amazed. amazed at how you always manage to weave in your discussion of a Tudor place with the local cafe. Or
you always say, and then there's a cafe opposite. Oh,
it's one of my greatest pleasures in life is a journey to see a historic place, soak up my history, and then find a great tea room to enjoy a cup of tea and a slice of cake and just mull it all over.
Yeah. I can't wait to do that again, can you? Scone, cake and a cup of tea. Oh, brilliant.
Can't wait. Okay, good. So let's start with London then. What do we know about London and money and cost?
So London is a little bit different to the rest of the country. It can be a bit more expensive. So if you're going to be staying in London, I suppose one of the top tips is to plan in advance. If you turn up to a hotel, I mean, this is similar across the country, but particularly in London, if you just turn up to a hotel, it's going to cost you a lot of money. So I would say, you know, just be as organized as you can about the dates you want to stay. There's a big range of hotels. I mean, when I go down, I'm pretty basic. I stay at something like a Premier Inn. You know what you're going to get. You know, I'm single female traveller a lot of the time, so I know that they're safe. I know what I'm going to get. But, I mean, you can go to some absolutely gorgeous hotels as well. So have a bit of a search around on the internet as well. You know, there's plenty as well of, obviously, there's us chatting about travel online as well. And there's other groups that would be chatting, so you can get an idea of, you know, some good tips as to where to stay. And then when you're traveling in London, obviously we have the underground. We have buses, and we have the Clipper. Now, under ordinary circumstances, I'd say the Clipper is a fantastic way of getting around. So the Clipper is a commuter boat on the Thames. So it's not one of the touristy boats. It is a commuter boat. But obviously it's going down the Thames exactly the same as the others. So it's more of a reasonable cost. And you can go from, you can go from Greenwich up to Westminster. You know, you can really fit in a lot if you go on the Clipper. So I'd really recommend that. And if you have you done that, Sarah?
Oh, I love it. It's one of my favourite things, to just travel by boat down the Thames. You get a completely different experience of London, don't you think? I mean, it's like being in a different city. And I've often found if you do this in summer and the city is hot and sticky and smelly, you get out on the river and you've got the river breeze, and it's just so cooling and comfortable and such a pleasant way to see London.
I agree. And of course, you're following in the watery footsteps of, you know, of the Tudors, especially. You know, they wouldn't have, certainly not the upper classes, and they wouldn't have been dealing with the muddy roads. They would have been on the river. So you are seeing the city more from their point of view as well. Obviously, it looks a little bit different now. Obviously, we've got the underground, which I am usually a big fan of the underground, because it's a history in itself, the underground, especially some of the lines. You can you look at the tiling, it's, you know, you're going back into
in some instances the older lines are quite antique.
They absolutely are, and so you've got like the Bakerloo line, I think, is the oldest line. And it rattles, and the colour scheme is a little bit chintz, but you know, it's got a charm. It has got a charm. And the other way of getting around, well, obviously you can do Ubers. There's Ubers everywhere now, isn't there? Is the bus, and I think the bus is quite underrated. The bus is the cheapest way of getting around, and don't underestimate it, because you get to see a lot. And in fact, I say I automatically would use the tube. Until I was down in London with my children, it would have been a couple of years ago now, and one of them felt ill and didn't want to go down into the underground, wanted to stay in the fresh air. So we took the bus, and I was like, why have I not done this before? We went, I think, from Chelsea to Westminster, I can't quite remember, we ended up going past Number One London, which is the house of the Duke of Wellington. Was the house. So that was Number One Hyde Park, which was Number One London, his address at one point. You just got to see loads. I was like, oh, I mean, obviously you have to go on the top deck if you want to see the most and fight for the front seat. But so depending on your budget, depending on how you want to see London, you have got the options of all of those different things. And like I say, if you want private transport, there's plenty of Ubers and black cabs waiting to take you around as well.
Okay. I would just maybe add something. I historically don't like the underground so much, particularly in summer. So I would often go in a taxi. Now, taxis used to be okay, but the black cabs are great. I love it for the same reasons that you were talking about, that you get to see everything. Yes. But they can be quite expensive. And I would just, a note of caution, I'm not thinking many people would want to go from the west of London to the east. The east is more of the sort of financial district, the financial part of London. So from a tourist point of view, probably not so well used. But the only thing I would say these days is London is more choked with traffic than ever. And sometimes you can be sat in that cab for an awful long time and rack up quite a bill. So this is where I think the underground just steals the show. I mean, maybe we can come back another day and talk specifically around the best ways to get around London and some of the top tips for that, because it's a topic in its own right, isn't it?
It is actually, we'll come back to that, because you're right. And actually, the road congestion is only getting worse. So yes, that would be a good topic. We'll cover that another time. So another thing to mention about London is you can use your Oyster card. So you can get this Oyster card, and anyone can get one, even, you know, you don't have to be a UK citizen. And you can load it up. It's like a prepaid one. Now, here we have contactless payments on our bank cards a lot, and you can also use those. And what they do is it means that you're charged for every journey, but only up to a certain point, and then it will be capped. And it's capped depending on what zones you go into and what, obviously, kind of transport you've used. So the Oyster card is worth it if you haven't got a contactless bank card, because you're only going to ever spend a certain amount. Just a word of caution on, if you're using a bank card, make sure you use the same bank card in and out, because if it doesn't clock you swiping out somewhere, you get a much, it's not capped, you just, I can't remember how much it is, but you get a big whacking kind of 20 quid throwaway thing, because they assume you've...
Really good point.
Yeah.
That just reminded me about something slightly different. So excuse me for butting in for a moment, but if people are driving into London, say they've been out, maybe most people won't want to do this. Most people are coming from abroad. I know it's quite difficult to think about driving on the other side of the road, particularly in a capital city where it's busy. Yeah. But we should just mention the congestion charge maybe, so that people are aware of that, because if you don't know it exists, and now there's an ultra low congestion charge, I think. And actually, it was my partner that was just saying the other day, because we're going into London to do some recording, and it's right in the middle, and he said, I must book that before we go, otherwise I'll get an £80 fine rather than the £30 charge. So maybe we should just say a little bit about congestion zones.
Yeah, so they like you say, they are changing, because depending on what they're doing at the moment. So the roads are generally marked. That doesn't help you if you find a road you need to go down and it's got a red lane, which is it all shows that you're going to the congestion charge lane,
isn't it? It's actually on the road. You will have
it is on the road.
The signs on the side of the road, and there's a red notice on the road that tells you you're going into a congestion zone. Yeah.
Yes. So I'd suggest, if you're staying at a hotel that has parking, so they're expecting you to drive in, that you speak to the hotel for information first about where they are in London. So what you're going through the congestion zone, I imagine you would be, to get to the hotel, then you know what the deal is with that. Because it wasn't a case before that you had to book yourself into London. So in terms of the congestion charge, so that's new as well. So it is a moving feast. It's always worth having a look. Now, the Transport for London website is packed. I wouldn't say it's the easiest one I've ever used, because there is so much information on there. But if you look that up, it's just tfl.com, I think. So it stands for Transport for London, and there's loads of information on there about the costs of travelling in London.
Okay. Well, I'm noticing we've managed to fill a good 10, 15 minutes just talking about London. So maybe we should go outside of London.
Let's go outside of London then. So we do get asked between us, don't we, quite a lot about, well, if I'm staying in London, lots of people do, but I want to go somewhere else, and people want to cover quite a few miles is what I've noticed. So we did get asked the other day whether you could manage to go up to Edinburgh in one day with a stop off in York. I actually thought that was rather
criminal. I thought it was criminal.
Well, I did think, well, only if you don't really want to see York. Ambitious, that's the word I was looking for.
That's maybe a good word.
Yeah, I thought I wouldn't recommend it if you actually want to see places. But in terms of cost, again, so trains are interesting. Hotels, try and book as early as possible. Generally, that's what I found, is the earlier you can commit to a booking, the cheaper it generally is. Trains, however, though, have a sweet spot, and it's about 8 to 12 weeks before the journey. So before that, you're not probably going to find a good price. And as it gets closer to the journey, as you'd expect, it gets more expensive. It's actually a really frustrating part, I think, of UK trains, that the price can be so different for exactly the same journey, depending on when you happen to book it. I find that quite annoying, but that's the way it is at the moment. And if you get, so if you are looking around, I'd say 10 weeks-ish beforehand, I think generally they're a little bit cheaper, but also you might be able to do something like an upgrade to first class for relatively small extra amount of money. I've upgraded to first class before now between Birmingham and London for about £10. And that's, you know, you get a lot more. You do get a lot more. It's a lot, they're much nicer carriages. You get some food, hopefully, usually. There's somewhere for your suitcase, which obviously if you're traveling and maybe you're moving between cities, you're going to want somewhere to put your luggage. So first class is worth looking into if you manage to get the sweet spot where the upgrades are quite low cost. One thing I would mention, though, is they are only worth it on certain rail lines with certain rail companies. I wouldn't do it with Chiltern. I'm afraid I've tried a couple of times. It's really, really not worth it. They literally just have another piece of the carriage locked off, sort of cornered off with doors that says first class, and that's it. That is their idea of first class. Right. Great Western, though, and Avanti, who took over from Virgin a couple of years ago, their first class is actually first class. They're different carriages. There's way more space. They've got the food service. So they're worth looking into.
Avanti line would be the north-south, the main north-south line for London.
Exactly. Exactly. So your Avanti line, yeah. So that would be the one if you're doing the ambitious London to Edinburgh with a stop off in York journey. Wouldn't recommend that.
We're both giggling because, I mean, if you know York, you'll know why we're smiling. I mean, it's a beautiful, beautiful medieval city. It's packed full of historic stuff. And if you really want to do it justice, really, a day or two, not just an hour. I think you'd be kicking yourself if you came the other side of the world and you stepped out of York train station and had an hour to look around and then you had to get on the way again.
Absolutely. I mean, the Minster itself, I was supposed to be going last year, so I've still got that gem to look forward to. But, you know, I was fully booking in a whole day to go around the Minster. Yeah. You know, there's no two ways about it. I wasn't getting shoehorned into an itinerary.
Let's focus one on
that. Yeah, sorry. Let's get us back. So you're probably looking, so a ticket from London to Edinburgh can cost you anything between 60, which I thought that was quite a good price. I found £60 up to, and some people might want to consider this, up to about £200 for the sleeper service. Where you can,
dollar wise, I'm just thinking, so US dollars, £60 would be about $80 to $90
at the moment. Yes, I think in exchange rate terms, yes, it's going to be about another half again in dollars. Is that right? Something like that, a third again. And then to get to the Midlands again, you can get between so London, the Midlands. So Midlands, you're talking Stratford, you know, those kind of places. So you probably, it's the line to Birmingham, and you can get between London and the Midlands between 22 and up to £100. So there's the difference for the same journey in terms of when you book. So that would be my tip is keep looking for the right price. And I always go to trainline.com.
Well, that's a great tip, trainline.com, and they look for that sweet spot around 10 weeks before the travel. So you might have booked your holiday over to the UK way before that, but hold on in terms of booking your train tickets till you get that just a little bit closer. I think those are a couple of really, really important things for people to bear in mind.
Yeah, yeah, because I always assume the earlier the better, but actually with trains, it doesn't quite work that way. So, yeah, so I think for travel-wise, that's, you know, I mean, everywhere else, again, we have buses. I wouldn't particularly recommend buses unless you're in a, maybe another major city like Manchester or somewhere like that. They're very difficult to work out where the routes go, their timetables. I don't particularly think our bus service is that fabulous, to be honest.
I agree with you. It's my least preferred mode of transport, not least because you're lurching from stop to stop all the time, and if you have an ounce of travel sickness, which I suffer from, that is going to really nail you. So I stick to, my preferred is driving or train for the longer distances. Definitely
Yeah, and even if you didn't want to drive in London perhaps, which to be fair most UK people wouldn't choose to drive in London either, you might want to look at hiring a car if you are going to be outside of, either coming outside of London and you're not going to London at all, which means you're very adventurous compared to most people, or you're heading out of London for a few days, then yeah, maybe look at a car. Taxis are generally a little bit cheaper outside of London as well, so you've got those options as well.
Yeah, good. So I think we've covered a lot of ground. Is there anything else that you want to tell us about before we say cheerio for this month?
So I suppose the only other thing is admissions that I really want to cover, because we could cover food, but again, you know, it's you could go to a sandwich bar, you could go to a restaurant. It's going to be very similar here to any other country. But one thing that we do have, which I'm really proud of, is we have a lot of free places to go. We have a lot of free so a lot of our museums are free, and our churches and cathedrals generally are free, unless it's Westminster Abbey, and then you're going to be paying about £20 to get in, £20. So there's a lot of places that you can get into for free. Now, I noticed when I went interrailing a couple of years ago into Europe, and nothing was free. And it was a bit of a shock, because I can't even go meandering around a little museum. Nothing was free. So I think that's something to bear in mind. You know, there's lots of places you can go. And I know you've covered a lot of churches that off the beaten track in your podcasts, where, you know, quite significant people out of Tudor history are buried in, you know, I know we have them in cathedrals, but in little churches as well. There's so many places like that to go and see. But if you're wanting to go and see maybe a lot of English heritage sites or National Trust, so English heritage, how did somebody describe it once? English heritage are basically without the roofs and National Trust are with the roofs. Now, one thing, so English heritage tends to be a lot of our castles. So Kenilworth Castle is that kind of place is covered under English heritage. And you can pay individually each time you go. That's not, you know, or you can buy passes for like a year. And there's shorter term passes, which are slightly cheaper as well for people coming from abroad. So you might be able to get a 7-day or a 10-day pass for while you're here. If look at it though, because sometimes they sound like a good value for money, but you would have to only be going to English heritage places for that time maybe to pay for it. So each individual site has its own cost, its own ticket price as well. And it's English heritage have got a website, and they've also got an app, so you can look all that up from the comfort of your sofa before you travel?
An English heritage, for example, because I wrote a blog just on this, how to save time and money. So I'll put a link in the show notes, and the link to the show notes will be in the description with this podcast. But that kind of summarised some of the things we're talking about. But for example, when I was writing that, I was looking at the most expensive English heritage property, which I think was Dover Castle, and that's about £20 to get in. And then, for example, you could go to a ruined abbey. I'm just thinking of one off the top of my head I've been writing about this week, Thetford Priory in Suffolk, completely free. So yeah. Some of the more ruinous places managed by English Heritage, some of the abbeys and ruins are actually free to get into. But you could pay a whole range of different prices.
You can. There's some that are about £4 or £5 to get into. So just have a look at that. Don't just assume that a pass is going to be better for you, because it might be that if you look at the individual places you're actually going, it won't save you any money. It might save a bit of hassle, but not really a lot, because you just go to the ticket booth and pay to get in. So you can do the same in National Trust, although National Trust are very much gearing towards the outdoor spaces. So from a historian's point of view, a history traveller's point of view, they're less interesting, to be fair. If I was going to tip, I'd say English Heritage.
I think they've been forced down that road, haven't they, because of COVID, and because a lot of places have had to close their indoor space. So I think the National Trust strategy has been to focus on the outdoors, which is a bit terrifying, really, for people like you and I who love actual buildings. But anyway, let's see where that pans out.
Yeah, it is actually, because they weren't that good at it before, if I'm brutally honest, and they were just about getting to it. And then, so yes, they have some beautiful buildings. So I do hope that they go back to looking at the history of the buildings as well, because that would be great. And then the historic royal palaces. So anyone's coming over and want to do Tower London, Hampton Court Palace, Banqueting House, they have options for membership for non-UK residents. Again, you can just pay per time you're going. One thing I would say, though, is they do an online price. So for their tickets, which does save you a few pounds. So even if you don't get one of the passes, if you're going in to individual sites, try and buy your tickets online before you go.
That's a good tip, actually, isn't there? You could, particularly actually also now, I mean, who knows what's going to happen with COVID, but for those places that are open, even just for the outdoor spaces, a lot of them are requiring you to book in advance and book tickets in advance. So if you are particularly intrepid and are thinking of coming over, in the near future, do make sure that you think about, really, you have to think and plan ahead at the moment, more so than ever before, I would say.
Yes. I do hope we get some spontaneity back, because I think life is better. It's more fun with some spontaneity. Absolutely. But if you love planning, or you have to plan, at least the options are there for you to be able to do that.
Well, that's fantastic, Philippa. We've covered a huge amount of ground there, but really some absolutely top tips there for people to think about. So thank you very much.
You're very welcome.
Before we go, a couple of things, though. First of all, what are we going to be tackling next in next month's Travel Essentials show?
What's next on our agenda? Well, next month on our agenda is the UK beyond London. So we do find we can be a little bit drawn into the London part and we get London centric, but the rest of the UK has so much to offer. And we're going to cover some places for you to think about if you're coming to the UK and you want to, maybe you don't want to do London post COVID. I think some people are going to feel like that. They want to get out of the city sort of idea, or you've done London and you want to find somewhere else to go. There's going to be some suggestions for places that you will enjoy.
Brilliant. Maybe I could bring along a few of mine as well, and we could do a bit of a swapsie on some of our favourite places outside of London to visit.
Absolutely. Yes.
Okay, so now I said we should absolutely find out a little bit more about your Patreon programme and maybe what's coming up for you and where people can find you.
Yes, thank you. Well, so I can be found on Patreon at patreon.com/British History. It's brand new. I'm really enjoying it so far. So you can choose, right? You can choose your tier from upper class. That's the lowest, because, we're all at least upper class You can be upper class, you can be the nobility, you can be a member of royalty, or you can be a member of the monarchy. Oh. So depending on what level, you know, of benefit you want, then you can choose. And it starts from £5 a month, which is about $6.50, I think, at the moment. And each month we have, there's a blog, a historian interview, and we do live events, and I do virtual tours in there as well. And depending on the level of a tier you go for, some people actually get access to private one-on-one tours with me as well. At the moment, all online. In the future, hopefully some of that will be actually in situ as well. So yeah.
Brilliant. Well, that's great. So I'm going to look forward to picking up with you next month. So thanks very much, Philippa.
Thank you very much for having me. Bye, everybody.
So that was Philippa from British History Tours. And do make sure that you check out everything that Philippa is up to. She's got a lot going on. Anyway, now we are ready to go on to the next part of the show. And if you remember, this is where we feature a top tip for a historic place to stay, because of course it's wonderful to hit the road and see all our favourite historic properties, but it really is the icing on the cake when you can lay your head down at night in somewhere which is just dripping with history. And you'd be surprised how many wonderful places there are in the UK that you can do just that. Now, to help me along with this part of the show, I invite either some of my blogging friends or indeed listeners to the Tudor History and Travel Show. And so I'm delighted today to welcome our first listener to the show. So, hello, Lisa. Welcome.
Hello, Sarah. Lovely to be here.
Yeah, it's so lovely for me. Such a privilege to be able to see one of my kind of followers, because of course everything is online these days and I don't get to see many people. So what a pleasure it is for me to say hello to you in person.
No, that's lovely. It's nice to see you again anyway.
And thank you for sort of saying, yeah, I'd love to come on and share one of my favourite historic places to stay. So where are we talking about today, Lisa?
Well, we're talking about Freston Tower, which is in Ipswich. We visited there in 2012. So, you know, I've got quite a good memory of it. But, yeah, it was a fantastic place to stay at because it was just so very different.
So let me just help orientate folk from overseas who may not know where Ipswich is. So we are talking, aren't we, the south of the county of Suffolk?
Yeah, yeah.
On the east side.
Yeah, it's near Ipswich. It's near Colchester, Chelmsford. It's that side. Cambridge.
Yeah, and I'm thinking if you go out of London, it would probably be what, maybe an hour and a half drive out of London?
Yeah, I would think so, yes. I know we visited Bury St Edmunds on the way up, but that was a detour by choice. But yeah, it's not too far. And it's sort of, it's not far from the coast. Mm. So it's a lovely place to be.
Now describe this place, because I've obviously had a sneaky peek online before we were talking today, and it is rather unique and beautiful. So can you describe what it is and, you know, kind of why you loved it so much?
Sure. Well, it's a six-storey building. It's probably about 13 foot square. So each floor is a room. So you would enter obviously on the ground floor, and that's just a room with a sink and so I suppose just an entrance. There's a spiral staircase that takes you up to, I think the next floor was the kitchen. So that's one floor. And then above that, you've got a bedroom, another bedroom, and then the bathroom upstairs. And then the top floor is actually the living room. So, you know, you've got a fantastic view of everything around. And the River Orwell is within, you know, within view.
Yeah, so six floors. You're pretty high up there, aren't you? And so I think anybody who has a look at the link, you'll be able to see a beautiful picture of the tower, and it looks out, as you say, over the river.
It's over the River Orwell, yeah.
Do we know who built it? Any just a little bit about maybe just who built it?
Apparently, they think a Thomas Gooding built it in about 1578. Okay. And he was, I think he'd got lots of ships coming and going along the river. And they've suggested that maybe it was a lookout tower for him. They've suggested it could be an extravagant folly, which is something that we do have in England and, well, the rest of Great Britain. And they also said it could have coincided with the visit that Elizabeth I made to Ipswich in 1579. Whether she actually visited, I do not know. But, yeah, it's probably about a mile away from the river, so you can actually walk down across the field. But it's just a very nice location, you know. It's you're well placed for Colchester, Chelmsford. They do suggest you can visit Gainsborough Hall from there, where yes. you were on your trip this week. Colchester Castle. Now, Freston Tower is owned by the Landmark Trust, and they're an organisation. They take old buildings and they do them up, and they become holiday lets. They're very simply laid out, and the decorations tend to be sympathetic to the actual building. But they the prices vary throughout the year. So January, which is my birthday, so we always go to one in January, and they're usually quite reasonable. Mm. But, you know, as the year goes on, they get quite pricey in the summer. But, you know, it is a fabulous experience. You're staying somewhere that you couldn't, you know, you couldn't own it. You couldn't live there yourself. It's, they're incredible. You know, it's a proper piece of history.
Yeah, it really is. I know a few of the Landmark Trust properties. Of course, they span all the historical periods and they're very quirky, but there are some yeah. great medieval and Tudor ones. And yes. I think that's a great tip, Lisa, to have. I think we'll be coming back probably and looking at other Landmark Trust properties over the course of this series. But they are amazing, aren't they?
Yeah, they've got one in Italy and they've got one in France.
Oh, that's
they've
right.
They've got one in Versailles.
Yeah, that's right.
But they're dotted about all over. I mean, we've stopped in about six of them. So, you know, sometimes looking for somewhere to stay, we just sort of look in the landmark book and just pick an area and think, right, we'll go to that one. Or we might be going to a particular area and I try and see if there's anything located nearby. Yeah. But, you know, you get there and there's no TV, there's no phone, there's lots of games to play, there's board games. They always have a box file of all the local attractions. So there's leaflets, there's lots of information. They also have a book that everybody fills in. And everybody recommends where they've been to eat, what they've done, whether somewhere was good or bad. And they're well worth looking at the beginning of this day.
They really are. You can pick up some brilliant tips, can't you, from people who scouted out ahead of you and found all the best places to eat and visit. So absolutely. And just mention, you were saying, of course, at the moment, I'm running a virtual tour in my private Facebook group. Yeah. It's really to pass the time through lockdown. And we've headed out from London and we're heading up north. We're at York at the moment, but we came via quite close to Freston Tower. So
realised that Gainsborough Hall was quite so close because we stayed at another one called the Chateau. And I know we went to Gainsborough from there. So we visited Lincoln that time. Mm. But they're dotted everywhere. It's amazing how many of them there are.
And I think that part of the country, there's so much around Suffolk because you're on the border with Essex. So you've got the likes of Ingatestone Hall, Leomani Tower. You've already mentioned Colchester and Ipswich, and then Bury St Edmunds, of course, which has big links to Mary Tudor, sister of Henry VIII, and Framlingham and Framlingham Castle and Tomb. So there's masses to see around there.
In fact, you know, because I knew I was doing this, I started looking at it. Also following your little tour this week, and I thought, you know, I need to go back there. So probably will revisit Freston.
Well, I think that's a great way to end our conversation. And I'm so delighted that you've been inspired to go back and embrace Freston Tower. And maybe you guys who are listening to the podcast today or watching us on YouTube, as I say, I will put a link to Freston Tower in the show notes, and there'll be a link to show notes in the description. So with that, Lisa, I just want to thank you so much for being part of today's show.
You're welcome. I was a little bit nervous about doing it, but it's been absolutely fine.
Ah, good. Well, maybe that will inspire. And that's my call out to people out there listening to this podcast. And maybe you can, you also can give a little shout out for this, Lisa, to get in touch with me. If you've stayed at anywhere in the UK, a historic location, particularly medieval and Tudor, and you want to talk to other people and let other people know about this amazing place to stay, then make sure you get in contact with me, Sarah. And you can do that via my email at sarah@thetudortravelguide.com. What say you, Lady Lisa?
Yes, I definitely think that's something to do. Yeah. If we share everything, it just, you know, it's the best recommendation, isn't it?
It's to know that
is. Everybody's enjoyed it, what they've done. Yeah.
Excellent. Well, thank you very much again. And I'll see you in the Tudor sphere.
You will. You will indeed. Thank you, Sarah. Bye-bye.
So that's Lisa, and big thank you to Lisa for coming on the Tudor History and Travel Show Travel Essentials today to talk to us about her top accommodation recommendation, Freston Tower. And make sure to follow and search out the links that I'll be putting in the show notes. And now we are going to go on to the final part of this show. And this is my opportunity to share with you some Tudor-themed events that are going on both online and, COVID allowing, in person. So I've got a couple of things that I wanted to talk to you about today. So excuse me while I have a look at my notes. So what we have here is, first of all, a in-person event. Now, I will stress, of course, that COVID continues to cause problems. And although it looks as though we are going to be easing some of the restrictions as we move into summer, it's very, very uncertain. However, I am ever the optimist. And so I wanted to share with you one in-person event that's taking place around Easter time. In fact, on Easter, the Easter weekend. And this is happening at Hatfield House in Hertfordshire. Of course, Hatfield House is one of the principal childhood residences of Elizabeth I before she ascended to the throne. And you would be able to go along to Hatfield and meet with Henry VIII, his wives and children, courtesy of the Tudor reenactment group Tudor Legacies, who some of you may well know from around the Tudor sphere. Now, it's always wonderful, even though I do reenactment myself these days and so I'm well used to doing that, I still think there's nothing to bring a place to life than visiting it and seeing in the distance some beautiful Tudor ladies gliding across the lawns, around the garden, etc. It's such a joy and such a delight. So if you go along to Hatfield on the 5th of April and you purchase your tickets to get access to the house, you will be able to see the reenactors in and around, I think, the old palace of Hatfield. And that is in essence free of charge once you've got your ticket for the house. So once again, I'm going to put a link to find out how you can find out more about this event from the Hatfield House website, and they will be, as ever, in the show notes. Okay, moving on, and this is our final event for today, so just two for you this month. This is an online event, so wherever you are in the world, you can join in with this. And it's called Tudors and Stuarts Online 2021. And it's run by the Kent History and Heritage Centre on Saturday the 27th and Sunday the 28th of March. So in a little over a month's time. Now, this event is normally one of those events that's held in person. So if you were the other side of the world, you probably wouldn't have access to it. And this is one of the few upsides of COVID, that so many of these events have been moved to an online setting. And this is one of them. So according to the organisers, the weekend event offers a fascinating choice of live talks under the themes of royalty and conflict, minorities, manuscripts and religion, and social history. And there are a number of different speakers who will be speaking live, including friend of the Tudor Travel Show, Professor Glenn Richardson from St Mary's University, London. You've also got Amy Blakeway, Keith McClay, Andy Wood, Pamela Kling, and Matthew Johnson. Now, tickets for that event only cost £7.50 per person. But for those seeking entrance to individual lectures, so it's £7.50 per person per lecture. But if you want a whole weekend ticket, then that is available for the budget price of £60. And I should mention that all the money raised goes towards the Ian Coulson Memorial Postgraduate Fund, which helps support people who want to research Kent-related history topics. So it goes towards a good cause. And once again, I'll put a link in the show notes so that you can find out more information about this event. Okay, well, that's all for me, and it's all for this episode of the Tudor History and Travel Show Travel Essentials. I hope this has given you lots and lots of food for thought. Now, remember, if you want to support my work, I have a patron program, and you can find out more about that on the homepage of my Podbean podcast page. And there's lots of different levels of sponsorship available and perks that are associated with each of those levels. So do have a look at that if you want to help me keep the show on the road. Your support is always deeply appreciated. And of course, it's a huge thank you to all the patrons who currently support me and support this show. Thank you. And then finally, if you want to come on to the show to talk about your favourite place to stay, your favourite historic place to stay, then do remember to drop me a line at sarah@thetudortravelguide.com and let me know where you'd like to nominate. I'd be delighted to hear from you and hopefully to meet you here on the show. Okay, my friends, well, thank you for joining me, and I will be seeing you for another episode of Travel Essentials next month. But before then, of course, we will have our main Tudor History and Travel Show at the beginning of March. And as a reminder, we will be actually on location at Sudeley Castle in Gloucestershire. So I'll see you again. And until then, my friends, all that remains for me to say is happy time travelling. Thanks for tuning in, folks. Now remember, if you've enjoyed the show, please do like, rate, and subscribe to this podcast to spread the Tudor love. Until next time.